Well, finding out who you are and where you come from, I think, can be an interesting and enlightening journey. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today traveled to three continents to walk in the footsteps of his ancestors and discover the story of the sunken slave ship, the Henrietta Marie. And he shares his story and the story of the people touched by this ill-fated ship with us today in a book he's written for children. He's Michael Kottman, an award-winning journalist, a Pulitzer Prize winner, a former political reporter for The Washington Post, serves as a special consultant to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration for its initiative on the African-American contribution to the maritime industry. And he's the author of The Wreck of the Henrietta Marie and a new book for young readers. It's called Shackles from the Deep, Tracing the Path of a Sunken Slave Ship, A Bitter Past and a Rich Legacy. You may be familiar with the story of the Henrietta Marie. What questions might you have about slave ships, that slave ship or others? I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at ideas@WPR.org or go ahead and post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Michael Kottman, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having me on the program. I really appreciate it.
I tell you what, I've got an eighth grade daughter, and I'm going to get a couple of copies of your book, Shackles from the Deep, and put them in their library. I think it's a wonderful book, and I think it deserves to be read by a lot of people, a lot of young people.
Well, thanks for that. I really appreciate that, and I hope she enjoys it.
I know she will. You published The Wreck of the Henrietta Marie a few years ago. What inspired you to write a version of the story for young readers?
Yeah, that's a good question, Larry. I thought this book would resonate with young readers because it's part detective story, it's part underwater adventure, and part underwater mystery story, and it's a part personal journey and a spiritual journey in part. So I thought that the combination of those elements may spark a lot of interest in the minds of young readers who may want to scuba dive one day, may want to choose a career in oceanography or maybe marine biology. So it combines a lot of these elements, and I was hoping, you know, it would be a page-turner for young people.
Well, it was a page-turner for me, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be a page-turner for my daughter as well. She's actually interested in marine biology, so I know she's going to find a lot of interest in this. You grew up in Detroit, so how does a kid from the Midwest get interested in deep-sea scuba diving?
That's a great question, and it's a great segue because you're talking about your daughter reading this book at a young age. And when I was young, Larry, I used to watch a program called television show called Sea Hunt, which I'm sure some of your listeners remember.
Oh, I remember Sea Hunt.
Too, right? And there are people who don't want to admit that they remember it, Larry. But I kind of force it, you know, when I'm on the road doing the book tour, and force them saying, you know, you guys, I know you remember Sea Hunt. And I used to come up from school, right, and watch Lloyd Bridges zip up his wetsuit, strap on scuba tanks, jump into the water, and he was somewhat right of an underwater detective. And I told my mom, you're right, growing up in Detroit, but I told my mom maybe this is something I want to do one day, scuba dive. And she looked at me like, you know, I was sort of crazy, but still sort of supported me anyway, mm-hmm. you know. And so she told me, you know, I can't teach you to scuba dive. I don't know anything about this, but I can teach you to swim, and maybe you can go from there. So she did. She took me to the YWCA, and for weeks she taught me to swim. And one day when she had a little more faith and confidence in me than I did, I wasn't really sure I could get in the deep end. And she came up behind me, Larry, and she just pushed me in.
That's a great
and I
story.
Thought, oh, my God. My first thought was, I'm going to be, you know, emotionally scarred for life. You know, because my mom pushes me into the deep end of the pool. But you know what? She knew something because she had been teaching me. So I swam. And up and down, you know, the length of the pool, underwater, on top, and, you know, the American crawl and, you know, the breaststroke, side stroke she taught me, and I've been swimming ever since. And so my father would pick me up from the pool, take me to the library. he didn't think I was getting enough history lessons in the Detroit public school system. And so he would ask me to come home and give him a book report. So on top of all my other schoolwork that I had to do, I had to deliver a book report written and orally for my dad. And I didn't appreciate that at all back then, I'll just be honest with you. I appreciate it now, but I didn't then. And but what would happen, Larry, is I would read about these faraway, wonderful places around the world in Asia, Africa, and Europe. And I would read about the African slave trade and about history. And I thought, one day I want to travel to these places, and I want to write about them, and I want to visit people and immerse myself in different cultures. And so I think this is a long way of saying it, but that combination, you know, of my mother teaching me to swim, my father taking me to the library and learning history, combined and converged on me and led me on the journey that I'm on today.
Yeah, it's an amazing journey. I was thinking about my own scuba diving. I've enjoyed it. I can't do the deep sea or the deep scuba diving like you're capable of doing, but it's a lot of fun.
It is.
It is a lot of fun. Well, tell us how you got involved with Henrietta Marie.
Yeah, about 15 years ago, 20 years ago now, back in the 1990s, I got a call from my mentor in diving, Dr. Jose Jones, who's an incredible story in his own right. He's a Fulbright scholar and founded the National Association of Black Scuba Divers and created the underwater marine science curriculum at University of District of Columbia. He got a call from two folks in Key West at the time, one separate calls, but Corey Malcolm, who's the director of archaeology for the Mel Fisher Maritime Heritage Society, and David Moore, who's a marine archaeologist, and they said they thought they may have found a slave ship, and they wanted to know if members of the National Association of Black Scuba Divers wanted to be involved. And so Dr. Jones called me. We put together a team of five people, and we went down to Key West to meet David and Corey and explore and examine this slave ship. And part of what I write about in the book that I think is a very important element for young readers is this. It introduces this unprecedented partnership between myself and members of the Black Scuba Divers and the white marine archaeologist. And we forged these friendships and relationships with them over the years, you know, confronted some prickly issues about race and the African slave trade. But the sentiment is this, that, you know, we came together for a common purpose and a common passion. And it's never been done before. You know, black divers, white divers coming together to explore and examine the slave ship. So it's a tool that I use in the book to show young readers that it doesn't matter your racial and ethnic background, right? That if you have a common purpose and a passion and something that you care about, you can work together. And more importantly, not only just work together, but become friends.
You know, I was thinking back to my own school years, and I can remember reading a bit about slave ships, but it was done, it was a fairly clinical description, I guess you might say. Oh, sure, there were comments about the people suffered. But I'm telling you, when I looked at those artifacts, and the whole story for that matter, I thought, what a different view I came away with from just reading your book. And those artifacts tell us, what were the first artifacts from the Henrietta Marie that were found?
Yeah, it's a good question. In 1972, a treasure hunter by the name of Mo Molinar was searching for a Spanish galleon called the Atocha, which had about $400 million worth of jewels and precious stones aboard. As he was looking for, and they finally found the ship, by the way. They searched for the Atocha for 25 years, and they found it. But prior to that, he stumbles across a pair of shackles underwater. And I say stumbled, but really he told me that he felt he was led to these shackles. He was the only diver of African descent in the water with a team of divers, probably about a dozen people. And, you know, divers had swam, Larry, over these shackles, I mean, for decades, not knowing what they were. So here's Mo Molinar, comes along, grabs these shackles, puts them in a boat, but he realizes what he has. And I think the irony here is that 300 years after these shackles were used to, you know, bind and enslave African men, women, and children, you know, the first person to touch these shackles years later is a black man, a free man. And so he grabs the shackles, throws them in a boat, tells his friends, you know, I found something compelling. I didn't find treasure today. I didn't find glitter in the sand that he was looking for. But what he said is, I found something that links me to my past.
Yeah. And just looking at those shackles, those small shackles, mm-hmm. and realizing young children, well, young children, men and women, all in the hold of a ship, shackled. It was just looking at that photo brought a lot of feelings to me, and I'm sure to other people who look at and read your book. I'm telling you, the effect, I'm sure, on him was great. Why do we know so little about the slave trade, or at least why do I know so little about the slave trade?
Well, I think in some part that I would give you the Henrietta Maria as an example. It took a lot of people. It takes a village to raise a family. It took a village, actually, to research the ship with a lot of help from historians in London. And the reason why is because when the Henrietta Maria sank and ships like it, the records went with it. And so, in part, historians were able to piece together the history of the Henrietta Maria through shipping records found in London, but also other slave ships' captains' journals that they wrote, mm-hmm. saying that they were traveling with the Henrietta Maria. They would sail, slave ships would sail together sometimes in clusters to protect themselves from pirate ships. Pirates would pick off sometimes slave ships individually and then run them as their own. Pirates were in a disgusting business, but they were lazy. They didn't really want to start in London and then sail to Africa to kidnap and to round up Africans for plantations. They just wanted to make quick money. So in part, to answer your question, is a lot records are lost over the years. But thankfully, there are historians and universities, who are doing great work and putting together a lot of research on slave ships around the world.
Yeah. Well, we have some callers online with comments. Let's go there. If you'd like to join in, by the way, number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Steve in Sheboygan, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I was just traveling between Two Rivers and Kewaunee, and I heard this program, and I had to call in. I'm a shipwreck hunter from the Sheboygan area. I've been doing it for over 40 years. And back in 1980, I found a schooner between Manitowoc and Sheboygan called The Home. It sank in 1858. In my research, and also the state of Wisconsin has done research on it, we found a period in the early 1850s where it was captained by a known abolitionist when it was sailing on Lake Erie. And there was a point in its history where there were no newspaper records of it at any kind. And we believe that this was carrying runaway slaves across Lake Erie from the Sandusky area into Canada. And I guess that's my comment.
The and the name of the ship, Home, H-O-L-M?
H-O-M-E.
Oh, H-O-N-E.
H-O-M-E.
N is in Nancy?
It's what?
H-O-N as in Nancy E?
H-O-M as in Megan.
Okay. Oh, H-O-M-E. Okay. Interesting. Michael, have you heard of that?
I did. I have not heard of it, but it's fascinating, but I will look it up.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
If you contact the State Historical Society, Tammy Thompson, and I think you know her, Larry.
Yeah.
She has it on the state's website.
Okay. Huh. Yeah. That is interesting. Thanks so much for calling. I really appreciate that information.
Thanks so much, Steve. Appreciate your call. What about you? You may have a question about the Henrietta Maria or other shipwrecks relating to the slave trade. Michael Cotman is our guest. He is the author of a book for young readers. It's called Shackles from the Deep, Tracing the Path of a Sunken Slave Ship, a Bitter Past, and a Rich legacy. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nador, on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we'll be taking a look at how you can talk to your children, or maybe your grandchildren, about their life's purpose. So I hope you can stay with us for that. Right now, I'm really enjoying my conversation with Michael Kottman, who is the author of Shackles from the Deep. Questions or comments from you, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And we've got a link to the book on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. If you want to take a look at it, you certainly can do it. Then, Michael, let's talk about what drove you to trace the origins of the Henrietta Marie.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I'm glad you brought that up. I got a call years ago from an editor. I wrote a story about the Henrietta Marie in a magazine, and I got a call from a book publisher who said, you know, it would be great if you could kind of retrace the route of this vessel. And I thought about it and said that would be great. You know, where do I start? and she challenged me, and she said, "You tell me." And so I did. I logged a number of dives on the wreck of the Henrietta Marie, and then I began to travel. I traveled across three continents and retraced the route. I researched in London at the Maritime Library, which was a great place where I pored over shipping records and slave ships' captains' journals, and I scuba dived just about every port of call where the Henrietta Marie anchored, in Jamaica, Barbados, and West Africa, and particularly off Goree Island. And I'll get into that with you if you'd like. But mm-hmm. But the shipping records, I just want to say that this was a very enlightening, instructive, but also kind of a painful experience.
It must have been.
The shipping records, because these captains were involved in this vile business, but they were prolific writers, and they would spend the evening going into their quarters and, you know, sipping ale and writing about the day's events. And so I began to read about how they would characterize African men, women, and children who were chained in the hulls of their slave ships, and they used words like, you know, beasts and creatures and monsters and cargo, black cargo, and not once did I ever read the words human being in any of these entries with these slave ships captains. So I would read, Larry, and digest and take notes, and then it would become overwhelming at some point, so I would just kind of walk outside, take a couple of deep breaths, and then go back in and work. So what should have taken me maybe a few days took me a lot longer to get through that research.
I bet it did. Well, let's talk about your trip to Stream Mill and the story behind that part.
Yeah, this was sort of fun and just a tremendous experience. I traveled with David Moore, who's a marine archaeologist, and Angus Constrom, who is an expert on 17th century weapons. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to find the place where the cannons for the Henrietta Marie were manufactured. And there were eight cannons aboard that ship, and it was very heavily armed to protect itself, again, from pirates. But we wanted to try to get an idea, so we went through a lot of records in trying to figure out where this place was. It's in a little-known town called Chittingley, England, outside of London, and in the suburbs of London, probably about 50, maybe 70 miles outside of town. And we drove these winding roads and the back roads and countryside, and it's kind of raining and breezy, and you know, all we had a book that had a drawing, a sketch of what Stream Mill looked like in 1700. And so we get to this property, and we didn't know anything. We knocked on the door cold and just said, you know, we're journalists and scholars and archaeologists, and you know, the trail of the Henrietta Marie has led us to your front door. Can we come in? And in most cases, you know, you say that now right here in the United States, and people would probably dial 911 and, you know, run you off their property. But this very kind woman and her husband, who just, they seemed really nice. And they just let us in. And even though they didn't know particularly about the Henrietta Marie, they knew that their property at one point was used as a foundry, a manufacturing site for large weapons. And the manufacturers of these cannons for the Henrietta Marie would stamp the letter S onto the top of the cannon and then send the cannons downstream to be loaded on ships in London at a port called Wapping. So so she knew that these Swedish workers were years ago, centuries ago, were pounding hot iron to make these cannons and other weapons. So we toured their property, took a lot of notes, and just had a great day. They invited us in to stay overnight, and we were considering it until they told us that at night they can still hear the ghosts from the Swedish workers pounding the hot iron. And we decided that probably we'll go back to the London hotel, you know, where it's a little quieter and peaceful and no ghosts. But they were just outstanding people.
It must have been. How did you your feelings about visiting and looking at that place and knowing what went on?
It was a very sobering and surreal moment for me, and David and Angstrom as well. And I remember David telling me that he says, you know, I can understand and appreciate this site from an archaeological point of view, and as a scientist, he says, you know, what I can't feel is what you're feeling emotionally as an African-American person here, you know, going through this process. And he was absolutely right. And that's where, you know, we came together and we had great conversations, you know, about the slave trade, about contemporary racial issues as well, about partnerships. But it was, you know, I would just sit on the stream and just sit there and kind of reflected back, thinking about these people making these weapons and people manufacturing the shackles, for example, that we talked about. You know, the large shackles, they weigh about 10 to 15 to 13 pounds for adults. But then the tiny, frail, small, light shackles weighed about 3 pounds each, and those were shackles used to bind children. And we know that at one point there were 40 children aboard the Henrietta Marie. 30 boys and 10 girls. And we also know that made two slaving voyages. Your listeners may want to know 1698 and 1699. The Henrietta Marie sank in 1700 after being blown severely off course by a hurricane, and sank in an area called New Ground Reef, which is about 40 miles off the coast of Key West, Florida.
And fortunately, there were no potential slaves on the ship.
Yeah, that's, you know what, that's interesting the way you phrased it, because you're right. I've done a lot of thinking about that, Larry, and I used to think the same thing. And you're right. There were about 250 African men, women, and children offloaded on the island of Jamaica to be sold to work the plantations of Jamaica, rum and sugar plantations. The ship in the Henrietta Marie intended to go back to London to get supplies for another run to Africa, but got blown out off course. You're right. So the crew went down with the ship, but not any of the African people aboard, the enslaved Africans. But here's what I thought about over the years, and I haven't really talked about it a lot. But I wonder, you know, was it fortunate that they weren't on board?
Or
the way to look at it also is maybe it was unfortunate because they were thrown into a life of slavery.
Yeah.
You know, after that, right, a brutal life of slavery. Would have been better to perish with the ship? I don't know. I'm just raising that issue.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're right. It's certainly another way to look at it. Amy in Madison has something for us. Amy, thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. Oh, thank you for listening to me. I hope I don't blather on. Michael, I'm going to read your book. As a white woman, okay, I think that, Larry, when you were talking about, tell me why I haven't heard about this before, it's a real challenge, only as much as we let it be as white Americans, that we really teach ourselves. You can't expect it to be taught in classrooms because the books are written by white society. So I've made it one of my purposes, not only to teach my daughter, but to teach myself about what happened, about the absolute cruelty of it, about the sin of slavery and how it impacts to this day people of color. We need to keep searching out authors like Michael. And I'm going to read the book even though it's for young adults because, you know, I'm 60, but I'm still learning. But it's really to that point about educating ourselves. Our schools just don't do it. And yeah. So we need to. We're not paralyzed and we're not unable to read. So we need to go out and do that work and make sure that we impress it upon the next generation.
No.
So I'll take my comments off the air. Yeah. Thank you very much. And Michael, you're wonderful. I really appreciate your work.
Yeah. Thank you, and I really truly appreciate your call and your thoughts. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for calling, Amy. Appreciate it. And let me just invite others to call in at 1-800-642-1234. Comment or question, we'd love to hear from you. Dan in La Crosse called. He recommended a movie called Amazing Grace about a British slave ship captain mm-hmm. who became an abolitionist and wrote the song Amazing Grace.
Mm-hmm. It's a good film and a great story. Absolutely.
Talk about your experiences that you talked about going to the Caribbean. When you went there, what were you really looking for?
Yeah, I was looking for in the Caribbean. Larry, can I just make one point about Amy, that last caller, Amy?
Yes, you bet.
I just have to say this because I think what she said was powerful and poignant because it goes to the heart of exactly what I was trying to do. This book is just not just a book for African American kids. This is a book for everybody. It's a book for all races, all backgrounds, because the African slave trade is a part of our global history. And I just want to harken back just a minute to the phone call that we got years ago from Corey Malcolm, of the white marine archaeologist I mentioned. When he called, what he said was, he said, "This is we're calling you guys, black folks, because this is a part of our collective history." And that resonated with me. And I thought about that while Amy was making her point, because she makes an incredible point. She's right on. And that's what I was hoping to do. But I just wanted to say that parenthetically. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did.
So the Caribbean, it was important for us to trace also who manufactured these shackles. And we were searching for the manufacturer of the shackles and the consortium of slave owners who put together this this business, right, of slave trading through this particular ship. And so we knew that the ship traveled to Jamaica to a farm, really a plantation, where they would unload Africans and sell. So we did the same thing we did in Europe, Larry. We began to just kind of knock on doors and try to figure out, because we were tracing the steps of one of these slave traders named Mad Jack Fuller. And we began to knock on doors, and there were people who did know about the slave ship business, not in particularly about the Henrietta Marie again. But one neighbor, you know, told us, he says, "Well, you know, you want to go down the street and make a right and go down the corner and take a right at the big tree. I mean, there are like 100 big trees, right? And and you'll find a Fuller family." And as you know, in the 1700s during the slave trade, the slave traders would give their last name to the Africans who worked their land. And that's how they got their last names. So we went down the road and found black Fullers. And these were, we believe, the descendants of the slave ship Henrietta Marie. And again, they didn't know particularly about that ship, but they did know that their ancestors came over in slave ships to work these plantations in Jamaica.
Yeah, it an amazing story. Danielle in La Crosse has something for us. Hi, Danielle. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. My question is about the suitability of your book for kids, kind of touching on the previous caller and educating kids on the history of black slavery. And I have 9 and 10-year-old boys, and I'm wondering about, you know, introducing them to it via your book.
I didn't hear the last part.
About introducing them to your book. They're 9 and 10 years. Yeah.
Got it. The book is, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. And it's a good question. The book is designed for kids, young readers, 8 to 16 years old. And I wrote it in a conversational way that, and we worked on this, and it was important, and I have to really give acknowledgement to these fantastic editors at National Geographic. I mean, they're just wonderful people. And they're so passionate, compassionate, and sensitive, and as am I. And so what we did was, to answer your question, I wrote it in a conversational way that explains the African slave trade, adds a bit of, again, detective work and underwater mystery and adventure to it. So it's not, Larry used the word, which I thought was perfect earlier, where he talked about books that have been written about the slave trade that are clinical. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to take the clinical piece out of this book and make it personal, make it instructive, illuminating, enlightening, uplifting in parts. And again, you know, adventurous. So I think that I think your children, I think, will appreciate it. And it's done in a way also where it doesn't, you know, it's not scaring kids away from this issue and from some of the, you know, the brutal elements, you know, slavery. I don't put that in this book. It's in the book for adults, but in this book, you know, we leave parts out. But I don't dumb it down either, and that's what I think is important too. And what I found was being on the road for about 8-9 days, talking to young kids, you know, around the country, and altogether, I think we reached close to maybe 1,700 kids over about 7 or 8 days. You know what? I learned something. They can take it. You know, they can take this. They appreciate it. They understand it. And again, I don't dumb it down. I don't go out of my way again to, you know, include any of the, you know, the brutal elements. But I talk about it in real terms, and they get it. They seem to embrace it. They understand it, and they ask a lot of questions. So I think that your children are appreciate it, and
they're right in the age wheelhouse. Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely. I'm looking forward to getting it for them. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks for your call. Betsy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Betsy.
Hello. Oh, thank you so much for your guest, Larry. Michael, I wanted to ask you, where do you get your book and what's it called? And I also wanted to just say how amazing it is to know the facts about how heavy shackles were, and you kind of get a feeling for that.
Yeah.
I just want to thank you for your, you know, nobody ever taught us this stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for your call, and thanks for, you know, sharing that, actually, your thoughts about that. You can get the book at Amazon.com. And or any major bookstore in the country will have it. But if it's easier for you just to order right off of Amazon, you can have it and get it in 3 days.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
It's called Shackles from the Deep.
Yeah, and if you got a local bookstore that you like to go to, you can go there and get it for sure. And we do have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. National Geographic does a great job. One of my former students, I'm a professor here at the UW, and one of my former students has been high up in the National Geographic, and so I always appreciate the work that they do. And so again, Betsy, I appreciate your call. The whole business of visiting with the Mr. Fuller was kind of fascinating to me. I mean, he knew some things, but didn't know everything for sure.
He did. You're right about that. He said that he had, you know, buried a number of family members, he says, in the same dirt that I worked in, you know, for years. And so he knew about the history of the slave trade. He knew about the history of his ancestors. And he was a phenomenal guy to talk to. And so I told him some things. I explained to him about the Henrietta Maria, about the slaving voyages it made in 1698 and 1699. I told him about the black scuba divers and our role, and he seemed to be really intrigued by that.
Yeah, you dove on the sunken city of Port Royal. Maybe talk a little about that business.
That was really a phenomenal afternoon for us, because we had to get permits to do it, so it took us about a week to wait to get permits from Jamaican officials to dive that site because it's protected. And this was the Henrietta Maria anchored there right around the time, maybe 1698, 1697, somewhere around there. And there was a an earthquake that around that time that leveled parts of the city of Port Royal. And so while scuba diving, that site, it was amazing because there are parts of the city that is still underwater. So I would scuba dive up and down and around a little bit of staircases, for example, and cobblestone, you know, where streets would be. I think it was called Lime Street, if I'm correct, but the main drag, you know, during that time, the main street was broken, so you can dive over cobblestone and broken staircases, and it was just a phenomenal dive and something to behold.
Before we run out of time too, I also the last part of your journey was to Africa. And the House of Slaves, it must have been something to step inside it. You can tell us about the House of Slaves.
It was. That was a very emotional trip. It was, you're right, it's called the House of Slaves. It's at Gori Island, which is right off the coast of Dakar, Senegal, in West Africa. It's about a short 20-minute ferry ride or so from downtown Dakar to Gori Island. And this was the infamous slave port where in 1700, generations of African-American families were separated by what they call the Door of No Return. Slave ships would pull up to the back of the Door of No Return, take African men, women, and children through that narrow doorway. And they called it the Door of No Return, Larry, because it was the last time that African people would see their homeland again. So depending on who you talk to and scholars, there, you know, millions of African people who were held in these stone cells in the House of Slaves, and then taken to sail to the New World and to sailing into slavery. So this House of Slaves is now a museum, and a wonderful museum to educate folks who come from all over the world. There are a lot of European tourists who come there. I saw a group of French tourists where I was there, and German and Japanese tourists, Chinese tourists, and African Americans and whites and Latinos from the United States as well. And so the curator then told me, he says, maybe we shouldn't call this the door.
Oh!
You have reached 3.
Oh, we lost our guest. And I'm not quite sure what happened, but I tell you what, here we are about out of time anyway. And although Michael Kottman isn't with us right at the moment, I'm going to thank him anyway for being with us today and talking about his new book for young readers. But you know what? I read it, and I'm certainly not young anymore, and I enjoyed it very much. Shackles from the Deep, Tracing the Path of a Sunken Slave Ship, A Bitter Past, and A Rich Legacy. It's published by National Geographic, and you can take a look at the book on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Thanks again to Michael Kottman for being with us today, and I hope I have a chance to talk with him again about future books. Well, finding your purpose, he was looking for his history, Michael Kottman. Let's talk about finding your purpose and looking ahead. It's really not a simple thing to do sometimes. It's not as simple as going to college or just going out and getting a job. Sometimes even in late adulthood, we're still searching for some purpose. And we'll be talking about that with Christine Whelan, a clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Human Ecology. That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network.